if you're calling us heroes and essential, then you need to treat us like heroes and essential and keep us safe.
Because there are more than just five mothers of the movement. Trust you me, there's millions of them who have been screaming bloody murder for years. And nobody has been listening.
We're looking at a change right now that the billionaires are kicking out our senators and our congressmen for us.
From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Network and radio affiliates focused on COVID-19 and the many ways in which this pandemic touches people's lives. I'm your host, Akua Holt. America is a nation of immigrants with the exception of the indigenous people who were here when settlers arrived, and Africans who were captives and brought to the shores of America for free labor to build this country. Up next, stories that represent the fabric of America. Where are you from? Where is your family from?
We in America are immigrants, or the children of immigrants. We are one people, but a people welded from many nations and races.
My name is Michelle, and my family came from Scotland to Canada in 1824, and then in the 1920s they immigrated to the U.S.
My great-great-grandfather came to the U.S. from China in the late 1800s and worked on the Pacific Railroad.
The Ukraine and Poland, and they came to the States in the 1890s.
My family's from Castellammare in Italy and came here around 1910.
Then there are families like this, who have suffered a religious persecution that could drive them from their home.
They immigrated to America after surviving separate concentration camps in 1946.
And my mom immigrated from Seoul, Korea in 1968.
To the man deprived of civil rights in his native land, America offers the hope of freedom.
My parents and I traveled to the United States after the Vietnam War from a Thai refugee camp.
My mom came here from Nicaragua in 1979. Just before the revolution broke out.
My father's side of the family came here by force. They are descendants of slaves. And my mother's side of the family came here by choice as immigrants.
My dad is from Trinidad, and then my mom is from Guyana, and then moved here in their late 20s.
And there are those who have known it firsthand, the political oppression of autocratic government.
And I was born in Jalalabad, Afghanistan, and I came to America with my family in 1982. Russia had invaded Afghanistan at the time, and millions of Afghans fled the country.
My parents are from northern Iraq, and my parents came to the U.S. in 1984.
Everything was going well until the revolution came. Then everything turned into chaos. My family immigrated from Iran to Tampa, Florida in 1987.
Well, my mom came to America from Ireland in 1987.
My parents migrated to Seattle, Washington from León, Guanajuato about 30 years ago.
My parents immigrated to this country in 1989 from Bangladesh.
My family and I moved to America from Russia in the early 90s.
My family is from India. I came to the United States about 10 years ago.
My mom, my dad, myself, and my siblings, we all moved here about 10 years ago when I was 16 from Iran.
Millions of every nation and calling drawn together by their vision of America, a vision of land, opportunity, and freedom.
I don't know how my story is any different than the Irish and the Germans and the Polish and the Scottish who came to America and did absolutely amazing things.
Both sides of the family are patriots. They love this country. They've worked very hard for this country. So in my opinion, it doesn't really matter how they got here, but why they stayed.
With unprecedented access to ICE operations, as well as moving stories of immigrants, Immigration Nation premiered and made headlines. The six-part series offers a rare penetrating glimpse into the interior workings of our own immigration policies upon seeing how ICE came across when its employees were featured alongside actual immigrants. It threatened retaliation.
Policía,
Can I see the warrant?
I'm not obligated to show it to anybody. I have a warrant, trust me. I'm not in here without it.
He knows that he's done. There's no judge for him. Step back from the wall, man. Stop that. What do we got?
No movement yet.
ICE has sworn to enforce federal immigration law. Copy?
10-4.
This is precision policing. We know exactly who we're going after. We're supposed to find them and remove them.
It's old cat and mouse game, and they're good at it.
Take them down.
Police, open the door!
Our job is to, bottom line, protect the public.
Okay, Ms. Nina?
Sí.
This is not going to be easy.
I'm a dad. Nobody wants to see children hurt.
My dad, he had a work permit, a license. I mean, for God's sake, this guy's even paying taxes.
Yo creo que el sueño americano a veces más que todo es una pesadilla.
Yeah, what's up, man?
I don't care what you do, but bring at least two people in.
He knew you guys were with me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a pretty stupid thing to say.
The more I have gotten into it, the more complicated the picture has become.
I'll help him out.
You want some feedback?
Es mi trabajo.
Why can't this mom, who's been through hell, just live with her kids now?
If I got them, my life will be complete again.
We're asking the governor to pardon deported veterans here in New Mexico. One signature can correct my life.
I can't tell you how exhausting it is, day in and day out, to be putting cuffs on people, doing exactly what I would do in their situation.
Tenemos un corazón. Queremos a nuestra familia.
Cansada, pero hermosa.
You're talking about the treatment of tens of thousands of people.
What type of operation is this? You can't tell me?
This isn't a one-off. This is the new normal. How could you do that? How could you do this? How could you remove people? As harsh as it may sound, the government didn't hire me for my moral views.
That was a clip from A Nation of Immigrants. Check out BuzzFeed for more of this story. As the plans for extending support for renters and the extra funds for unemployment is stalled in Congress, infectious disease and community health specialists Dr. Mark Allen Darry and Dr. Eric D. Griggs speak on the medical importance of avoiding pandemic evictions.
Now, as the economy continues to experience the harsh consequences of the pandemic, several federally funded programs and organizations are providing reduced or even no assistance at all as the federal budget continues to get reworked. Early on in the pandemic, many federal relief bills were proposed in order to provide stability to the working class that faced temporary unemployment. Now, a working bill to provide relief for renters and tenants is now stalled, and a wave of evictions is likely to result. Now, in July, the Census Bureau reported that 25 million people indicated that they had little confidence that they would be able to pay the rent in the next month. In addition, nearly 30 million people reported that they did not have enough to eat. Currently, the federal funding that provides 30 million Americans with $600 a week and extra federal unemployment benefits has now expired. And people across the country who depend on federal aid during this time of crisis are now facing evictions. With an influx of people filing for unemployment due to budget cuts and temporary layoffs, the unemployment benefits process has been slowed incredibly. The previous federal moratorium on evictions, which protected about a third of rental households in the country, lapsed on July 24th. And as progress with another federal relief bill is halted at the current moment, we can expect to see a major displacement of people as evictions begin to roll out. So, my thoughts on this is that another very sad COVID-19 story. And I think that this is really the beginning. The COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project estimates that 19 to 23 million renters will be at risk of eviction by September 30th. And in this time of crisis, many people need these federal assistance initiatives to maintain a stable income as unemployment is on the rise. It is extremely unfortunate to see so many relief bills and federal funding assistance be stalled right now, as many of the government's financial priorities that are targeted toward the COVID-19 response are looking specifically at vaccine development, which is important, of course. But funding that was previously designated for such relief and assistance programs are being reallocated directly toward some of these COVID-19 related efforts. And I really think it is incredibly important that we make sure that people stay in their homes and that we continue to pay people to stay home until we can get a vaccine, until we can bring herd immunity to 70%. And just as a reminder, maybe 10% of the total U.S. population, maybe 15%, has been already infected with COVID-19. And if we're trying to get to 70% of herd immunity, we have a long way to go. And really, we need to be able to figure out ways to keep people at home safely and to make sure they're paid to stay at home so that they have food on the table, they can continue to pay their bills, and they can continue to live dignified lives.
Infectious disease and community health specialist Dr. Mark Allen Derry and Dr. Eric D. Griggs.
These are heinous, heinous crimes, and they expect us to be silent and say, "That's okay," said Geneva Reed Ville, mother of activist Sandra Bland, found dead in her cell 3 days after being assaulted and wrongfully arrested in July 2015 in Waller County, Texas. Outcry over her death has shed light on a frightful pattern of African Americans dying in police custody. Ms. Reedville warns, "We've been silent too long."
You have women from the ages of 18 to 50. Kendra Chapman, 18 years old, allegedly stole a cell phone. 2.5 hours later, she hung herself. No. Sarah Lee Circlebear, downstairs in the infirmary, dead. Family upstairs paying the bond, already paid it. And she has no pulse. Dead. Something's wrong with that. Raynette Turner, "I don't want to die in your jail. I don't feel well." Found in her cell. Something is wrong with that. And nobody is screaming out about it. When I got the initial notification, I was angry. I was screaming. I was on my knees. I wasn't praying just yet. I was like, "God, no, this didn't happen. This is not real." Okay. So, for days, I was almost like a zombie. And I said, "Wait a minute. This is not happening to me. I have been worshiping you 30 years. Okay? I minister to people. I help people. I will visit the sick. I will do all that. And you want to take my baby? I'm mad." Because I still had too much bitterness. I'm just going to keep it real with you. Yes. Regardless of whether you're a minister, pastor, evangelist, you lose a baby, it's serious. Mm-hmm. You are angry. Yes. Okay? Yes. So I was bitter. Yes. And I said, "Okay, wait a minute. I can't stay bitter if I want to get better." And the minute that I was able to get up, it was almost like the Walking Dead started getting up. They would come to these meetings and come to these speeches, and they would be, "Oh my God, now I can talk. Now I can speak." All these hurting mothers who say, "Listen, I wanted to remain angry, but after I heard you at our church, I couldn't." It's a lot to deal with. It's a lot when you watch a process that is truly broken and you see little things along the way and you're saying, "Wow, that's not right, and I know it. And I know these other people around me know it. But what are we going to do about it?" Hence, you keep speaking. So now, even after all these deaths, all of these years, the world is now listening. Because there are more than just five mothers of the movement. Trust you me, there's millions of them who have been screaming bloody murder for years. And nobody has been listening.
Geneva Reed Ville, mother of activist Sandra Bland.
The DPS trooper who made the arrest has been pulled from patrol duty. State officials say he did not handle the arrest professionally. What started as a routine traffic stop erupted into a confounding roadside showdown and a death many refuse to believe is a suicide.
If I should die tomorrow at the hands of the policeman, would you even question why? Ooh. Would you shake your head, say this ain't right, or do your best to forget about me? Please, please, please don't forget about me. Question why? Oh, would you believe in my innocence? Would you even come to my defense? Would you believe in the good I've done? Or will my name be smeared and my story unsung? Search for the answers, we'll take what they hand us. Who's gonna stay with me? Please, please, please don't forget about me. Revolutionaries give up and comply for a house on the hills, white wife, couple meals. I'm less of Mohicans, I guess. Fighting for a cause, they say it's lost, but I can't let it rest. Rebellion in the memories of my mama's breast. And I drank till I was drunk, like I was lean off that crunk. We live in every word that we're rapping about. And the struggle to get hard, but we ain't backing out. Nothing is impossible. The word alone says I'm possible. So I'm the grace force that I'm possible. That's to be a hope. To believe you can't succeed when everybody and their mama say no. Yeah, I'm different, descendant of the fittest. Reincarnated just so I can handle business. My name.
told you, I probably never know. First thing first, you know back in middle school when they taught us it was three branches of the government. We forgot it when we got older. It's the judicial, the legislative, and executive. But all we know is the executive. That's the mayor, or the governor, and the president. Now none of them three people make no laws, they just be checking them. The laws come to their desk and all they do is say no or yes to it. So when the news station tried to tell us that Barack Obama couldn't put us on, we was all salty at Obama when it was the Congress members all along. We gotta focus on the legislative branch, yeah, they the ones that make the laws. Yeah, they the ones write how much food stamp money you get on the car. But when people that wanted to help us wanted the job, I know they probably lost. Cause we ain't even know their name, we ain't know their face, we ain't know it all. So the Congress or the State House, that's legislative, they make laws. So what we want from the president is what they do, okay, y'all? See, they election every 2 years, but we don't ever even go to those. The Congress, they can raise minimum wage, but we ain't even really know it, though. So you know how back in 08, when we all voted for Obama, we was all supposed to go back in 2010 and vote for the Congress. Cause they the ones make child support laws. They the ones choose if your kids at school get to eat steak or corn dogs. The State House make the court calls. So if the country failed, then you can't say it's them, it's your fault. Cause y'all ain't know to vote for Congress members that was for y'all. And they don't gotta leave after 4 years, and we just let them sit. See, they don't wanna tell you this, they want you to focus on the president. Now the third branch is the judicial, that's judges. They the reason why John Crawford and Trayvon ain't had justice. So when Meek Mill got locked up just for popping willies, we blame the judge and not the city when they let her get voted in. Cause they ain't know who to vote against. Imagine life on the other side. Roads better, schools better, everybody get their license back. Grocery store food better, custody of your kids back. Homeless people get new shelters. If we gon' fix the U.S., we gotta start with them two letters, me and you. Somebody told us that the government wanna keep us broke. But the only reason why those people in the government is cause we ain't vote. And I ain't talking about the president, I'm talking about the ones we ain't know. See, they was gonna try to keep it low, but it's gonna hurt them when they see the pros.
The National Basketball Association restarted its 2019-2020 season on July 30th. Black Lives Matter had been painted on the courts, and many players spoke to the press about racial justice. Here's Pacifica's Ann Garrison.
LeBron James, the biggest name in basketball, told the press that he and the league are now most concerned about the arrest of the police officers who shot Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky, in March.
Us as the NBA, and us as the players, me as one of the leaders of this league, I want her family to know, and I want the state of Kentucky to know that we feel for it and we want justice. What's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And this is a wrong situation that's going on in my eyes and it's a lot of other eyes.
LeBron asked whether it would take a video of Breonna's death to see justice.
Well, it's fortunate that we had the George Floyd video to see it. I mean, is that what we need to see a video of Breonna being killed for people to realize how bad the situation is? I don't even believe they was at the right place, right? Cops wasn't even at the right place. They just knocked down the wrong door and started doing what they did at that point in time, and that's just shooting away, and that's just not okay. I've seen a video today of a black man inside like a Walmart or Target or whatever trying to buy a bike for his son, and the cops was called on him. He had a receipt and everything, and the cops was called on him. They arrested him inside the store and took him outside. I mean, it's just heartbreaking, man. You guys don't understand. Unless you're a person of color, you guys don't understand. I understand that you might feel for us, but you can never really truly understand what it is to be black in America.
LeBron was one of the players who chose not to replace the family name on the back of his NBA jersey with one of the 29 social justice messages approved by NBA officialdom, the NBA Players Association, and Nike. Like his teammate Anthony Davis, he said that option simply didn't resonate with him. The 29 approved messages are Black Lives Matter, Say Their Names, Vote, I Can't Breathe, Justice, Peace, Equality, Freedom, Enough, Power to the People, Justice Now, Say Her Name, Si Se Puede, Liberation, See Us, Hear Us, Respect Us, Love Us, Listen, Listen to Us, Stand Up, Ally, Anti-Racist, I Am a Man, Speak Up, How Many More, Education Reform, and Group Economics, which seems to mean black people patronizing black businesses. Nike, the largest sports apparel manufacturer in the world, and the one who made the custom jerseys, is infamous for the exploitation of Indonesian and Asian sweatshop labor, and there were no messages of labor solidarity or respect for labor among the options. Nor was there a message to defund the police.
That was Ann Garrison of Pacifica Radio. Amazon workers protested unsafe working conditions, demanding a shutdown of the warehouse for at least 2 weeks for deep cleaning. Here's Steve Zeltzer, KPFA, Berkeley.
Amazon workers have been organizing nationally and internationally to fight for health and safety on the job. As the COVID pandemic rages, particularly in the United States, the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, has made billions during this pandemic as people have turned to the company to get deliveries. And one day earlier this month, the value of his wealth increased over $13 billion. Amazonian workers Bay Area held a solidarity work action in the fight to protect themselves from COVID, the dangerous working conditions, and also to fight for a $30 an hour wage. A car caravan was held to the Amazon DSF4 San Leandro warehouse on August 1st. The workers shut it down for over 4 hours, and they spoke out about their conditions and struggle. Let's go to the voices at this action.
This is the petition that we started on coworker.org. I've turned it into a QR code, so all that Mahmood has to do is scan this, and he'll have a PDF. He doesn't even have to take it from me in my hands. He can just grab his phone, scan it, and he'll have a PDF of all the people who have signed our petition calling on Amazon to shut this facility down for 2 weeks to prove that they actually do care about Black and Latinx lives. In the Bay Area, we are experiencing a surge of coronavirus cases. And this facility does not do a good job of enforcing social distancing.
We'd like to see every employee now pay 2 weeks to take time off so that there can be a kind of reset so that this can be cleaned appropriately, sterilized, and then everybody takes 2 weeks off to maintain the proper quarantine. We also want vans sterilized daily. Right now, they let that that job be placed on the small business owners, the DSPs, and they can't afford it. So you have DSP owners who are cleaning their vans once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks, or it's falling on the actual drivers like myself to find wipes and wipe down our own vans. That's just not safe. And if you're calling us heroes and essential, then you need to treat us like heroes and essential and keep us safe. We have families, we have parents, we have people that love us. I don't want to orphan my child, and I shouldn't be expected to, so that I can deliver Jordans and, you know, PlayStations to people who are tired of being stuck at home. I mean, I'm worried about a ton of things. I'm worried about the focus being taken off of this problem the minute it's not a hot story anymore and more deaths occurring and it not being something that's in the media attention, so it's like it doesn't exist, even though it's very apparent to us. It exists to us because we have to face it every day. I'm afraid of a government that cares more about their own ratings and their own votes, so they'd rather us not have testing because they think it means that they'll get voted in, and therefore they'd rather us die than them have adequate testing. That's terrifying to somebody who has to face the public every day.
So workers from Amazon, Tesla, Whole Foods, McDonald's, Uber, Lyft, Instacart, as well as teachers, nurses, longshore workers, and more stand together on August 1st, 2020. We are coming together to say enough is enough. And that an injury to one is an injury to all. Where was our government in protection of the American worker? It is time to call out our city leaders, our governor, assembly members, representatives, senators, and government agencies, and let them know that if they are too weak or greedy to work for the people they serve, then they can and will be replaced. They do not serve Jeff Bezos. They do not serve Elon Musk. They were elected and hired by we, the people. And we, the people, will be calling for their termination if they do not stand with us in this moment. The line in the sand has been drawn, or at least we shut it down. We are only growing stronger, finding each other as we continue to fight. All the money in the world cannot stop the movement now that it has begun. And we invite all those who feel disenfranchised by the 1% to join us in this fight, because we plan and we will win.
Steve Swift, supporting my son who works here.
Your son?
Yes.
What are the conditions for your son?
Pretty bad. They speed the workers up quite a bit.
Health and safety
issues especially, yeah. The pay is pretty minimal and minimal benefits, so yeah. They need to do consistent cleaning, which they don't do at this point. I'm in the union, yeah. I'm a registered nurse.
The thing about it is I just can't in any way fathom how one person's time could be worth so much more. We all have 24 hours in a day. There's no way that he does anything that much more valuable than what I do.
That's right.
That he should not have to ever worry about, like, he couldn't spend that $13 billion if he tried. But we got people in here struggling, working two jobs, and taking care of kids by themselves. And he can't even let us keep the $2 of hazard pay through the pandemic. But the thing about it is, it's not a one-way street. We have power too, and I'm out here standing by myself today, but every time we come out here, it's going to be a couple more people until the whole building is out here, and Amazon can't make no more money.
We reject greed. We demand justice. We are together. Workers in solidarity are unbeatable.
That's right.
When we are together, when we fight together, we win.
If they don't fix it, shut it down.
It ain't a war on drugs, it's a war on the hood.
We win. When we fight, we win.
This is Steve Zeltzer from Pacifica reporting on the San Leandro Amazon warehouse shutdown.
On Tuesday, August 4th, an explosion that could only be compared to the U.S. nuclear attack against Hiroshima in 1945 devastated an area of approximately 6 miles in the city of Beirut, Lebanon. The port is the lifeline of the country, as most of its exports and imports go through there. The explosion destroyed most of the food and medicine, killing and wounding hundreds and displacing many thousands of people. Beirut was once an important tourist and financial center in the Middle East until Israel's military invasion of Lebanon in 1982 to expel Palestinian fighters. From Beirut, Lebanon, lecturer and activist Rania Masri spoke to Pushback with Aaron Mate from The Gray Zone, thegrayzone.com.
It's important to recognize that this is a political system that has been maintained by the United States, maintained by France, maintained by other Western powers, and it is the political system that the U.S. has been trying to, you know, recreate in Iraq. They were trying to impose it in Syria. They want to impose it in Libya. It is the recipe for disaster, and it is in no way a democratic system. What we are calling for, and many others as opposition political parties are calling for, is true representation, where individuals have a direct representation with their government as citizens, not as members of a sect, not as members of a tribe, not as members even of a political party, but as citizens, the very basic aspect of democracy, where we build citizenship. And once we build that, then we can determine, do we want a socialist kind of economy? Do we want a capitalist kind of economy? But at the very basic, we build the foundation for a state. And the foundation for a state must be citizenship. This is what we are lacking in Lebanon. And this has caused this kind of a catastrophe that we've seen today. It also bred the wars that we've been having, where we simply don't exist as citizens.
You mentioned Syria. The U.S. recently imposed its harshest sanctions on Syria to date under the Caesar Act, and that was already having an impact on Lebanon. The port of Beirut was one of the ways in which the U.N. got desperately needed aid into Syria, and now that is destroyed, which makes aid delivery to Syria even more difficult. And of course, on top of the difficulties of bringing supplies into Lebanon, which imports more than 80% of its food. What is And of course, the border with Israel is non-existent because of the state of hostilities between Hezbollah and Israel.
No, because enemies, and not about Hezbollah. We are really enemies, and we. By the way, I have to say this: for us to build our state, because we want it to be a civil state where we are treated as equals, as citizens, and not as sects, we therefore have to be enemies with the state of Israel. Because Israel has this concept of Zionism, which is a concept not only of a settler state colony, but also one in which you prop up one community, so to speak. So it's an apartheid settlers that by design encourages sectarian statelets around it. And therefore, by design, the existence of a civil state in Lebanon would be a threat to Israel and vice versa. Their existence as a settler state, Zionist state, a settler state, apartheid state, is an existential threat to our existence as a civil state in Lebanon. And that is why we are enemies. So the border between Lebanon and occupied Palestine is way bigger than the situation between Hezbollah and Israel.
How do you see the neighbors around you responding? How are people coping? What are they doing? And just what are you expecting for the next immediate future? What is Lebanon going to be facing?
We've been getting, you know, several planes of support. They've been setting up field hospitals. We've gotten the countries that thus far have either sent us planes or will send us include Russia, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Qatar, the Emirates. I'm sure I'm missing a few. So they're setting up field hospitals. It'll be a little bit of a bandage in the meantime. But again, we're dealing with a catastrophe that is unimaginable. I mean, we've lost the majority of our medicine, again, at a time when we were already in a medical shortage. We've lost the majority of our grain at a time when we were already facing a shortage. We have a $5 billion loss in infrastructure, again, when we are already bankrupt. We have no financial means to rebuild. And we also, let us add to all of this problem, that we also still have the COVID pandemic affecting us. And now our hospitals are even more to the limit, not to forget the fact that we already had several hospitals that were destroyed or rendered incapable to maintain themselves because of the blast. So the situation cannot be worse. And I it scares me whenever I say that, because then I'm afraid that something even worse could happen. We don't know how we're going to be surviving the coming months in Lebanon. We simply do not know. The mood is one of extreme outrage, and I am hoping that we can be able to organize that outrage and direct it towards political clarity and direct it towards a new form of government, one that will not continue to cause us to live, you know, by chance, but rather cause us to live with a semblance of dignity, where we actually have a state and a nation. But it is beyond tragic right now.
Rania Masri from Pushback with Aaron Mate. I'm Akua Holt, and you're listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy.
We want to talk about it. Mind. Upload the revolution principle. You see a rock on the shore and say it's always been there. Download. No responsibility. Do what you want. Nobody cares. Upload the master race idea. Genetically disposed to rule the world. Download a future full of isolated. Full of isolated boys and girls. Upload a two-party system. The lesser of two dangers, illusion of choice. Download a male form of fashion. fascism. Nothing really ever changed. You never had a voice. One time,
if you look, you're sure gonna find you are mankind's history, a colonized mind. The one in power makes law, under which the colonized fall. Without God, it's just the blind leading the blind.
A joint venture record deal. It's just another way for the man to steal while he's sticking you with the grill. Download a temporary acquisition, a fleeting flame, watching. Nothing to leave in your will. Hey, 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 hey.
There is no longer a question of how to affect change. We've shown you how to succeed. Nonviolent, direct action, said seven-decade civil rights leader and minister, the late Reverend C.T. Vivian. He was called the field general of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and trained protesters in nonviolent strategies, organized sit-ins, and was jailed and beaten several times for racial justice. He said, "There is a tension like I've never seen. People are so wound up not knowing if they will be next. You have the tools to change your world to what you want it to be." Reverend Dr. C.T. Vivian warns, "We must safeguard our democracy," from a sermon in Atlanta, Georgia.
To the extent that we organize, to that extent, we can have the world we want to live in. When we stop organizing and stop thinking that we are less than, instead of understanding that together we are more than. And when we understand that God has already given us within us the ability to create the world we want to live in, not the world that someone else wants us to have to live in. It is that understanding that's basic. Well, the brilliance of prophets were that they were simple people, but they could put in one line what it takes whole books to be able to do. It's an example of that is perfect for today. Amos preached in the streets of Israel, and he said, they don't know how to do right.
They who store up wealth and violence in their strongholds. They don't know how to do right. They who store up violence and wealth in their strongholds. All right? And the same goes for today. It is the billionaires that are destroying the lives of thousands of average people. So they can be billionaires, and so you won't be able to do anything but obey their commands. We're looking at a change right now that the billionaires are picking out our senators and our congressmen for us, and have no way to go, right? So that we talk about a democracy, but you can't have a democracy when the few is deciding the future of the many. When we look at it and we told them to put the companies into great organizations, now we have corporations that are deciding more about us than Congress or the Senate. Huh? We're having a change in the world around us. And whenever that happens, God calls his people to preach about it. Well, we're in a position now where a good deal of the preachers are so conservative. We're living in a world where we can see all around us what shouldn't be is what is. All right? Is that these billionaires destroyed the lives of thousands of average people. Is that they destroyed their pensions life. One of the tricks of the big corporations was, tell you what you do, is that you put your money invested back into the corporation, invested back into the business, and we will see that you get 50 cents on the dollar as a return on your investment if you just leave it here long enough. And while they were leaving their money thinking that they were going to be able to retire with something, be able to have enough money to really, then those in charge of the corporations looted the treasury, walked away with the savings of thousands. Huh? And another way that they did it, they let the company go broke. Fired thousands of the people, and then their children and their wives and their and the dreams of millions were destroyed, and they and the lawyers made it legal. But the idea is to let them know, right, that we will not put up with that. We will have a democracy whether they like it or not, right? And that God is on our side, right? It has to be. One has to understand it. Because if you give them a little time, then there won't be any time. It'll be all over. You see, if the little sheep don't remember, the big sheep will come back and circle around and do it again. See, that's what Enron was all about. All right? You see, and you can buy just about anybody you want to buy in America today. It seems as though there is no sense of decency. As long as it's legal, it's all right, right? Is that, but underneath it all, people are being destroyed by it. You see, is that it's violence when families are destroyed. I don't care whether it's legal or not. It's violence when children are denied a decent education, whether you've got it legal or not. It is violence when you're forced to live on less than a living wage. It is violence when people can't protect themselves from the big sheep. It is violence when Arthur Anderson cooks the books, all right? And you pay the taxes to make up for what they don't want to pay for, all right? And when we look at it, you and I have been robbed. But even when we're robbed, we have to end up paying for it. You have to remember when you have been taken. You have to remember when the nation has been stripped. You have to remember. And you have to remember how it stopped, too. You have to remember how people's movements have made the difference in all of our lives. If it wasn't for the civil rights movement, we wouldn't be here today, right? It was a people's movement. is that we got the law on our side. They passed the law, but the law didn't mean anything in the South, shall we say. Huh? So we got the right for decent schools. But by the time the big sheep started tearing down the fences, right, we were without a decent education.
Wow.
And it's not only that, we have to understand that poor white people haven't been educated either. It wasn't just for us. It's for them as well. But they don't know that. So we must let them know it. That they're the next in America now too, right?
Right? You just heard from Dr. C.T. Vivian, Field General of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley honors John Lewis while in conversation with Felicia Leon of the Root Institute.
You mentioned Congressman John Lewis, who recently passed away, and you had the honor of working with him. So I'm curious as to what was the greatest lesson that you learned from him.
I consider myself to be inordinately blessed to have walked this earth at the same time as him, to have been poured into, to have been mentored by his example, but also hands-on, to have prayed with him, to have broken bread with him, to have been in proximity to him. So I feel inordinately blessed, while at the same time I feel robbed. And that's, you know, I know we had him for 80 years, but you can't have too much of that goodness. And quite literally, I am in his debt. Ayanna Pressley would not exist were it not for John Lewis. And, you know, it is especially acute to lose him at a moment of new racial reckoning in this country against the backdrop of such unprecedented challenge and hurt. To lose his moral voice and clarity, to lose the mooring and the anchoring of him is especially tough, especially now. And the greatest lesson that he's given me is just vigilance, is tenacity. You know, I'm very fortunate because I grew up in a household with a mother who was a tenants' rights organizer, a community activist, who made sure I knew that, you know, I should be proud to be Black. It is beautiful to be Black, but who also made sure that I knew that I was being born into a struggle and that she expected me to do my part in that struggle. She would say, you know, Ayanna, in life, there's a difference between your job and your work. Your job is what pays the bills, but your work with a capital W is the work of the upliftment, the betterment, and the advancement of community. And the work of justice is cradle to grave. You know, so she never patronized or condescended me as a child. It was sort of like, this is what is expected of you, and buckle up, because it's a long journey.
That was Congressional Representative Ayanna Pressley. We close with a moment of reflection in honor of Reverend Joseph Lowery, known as the Dean of the Civil Rights Movement and Minister of the United Methodist Church. Lowery was born October 6, 1921, and was 98 years old when he made his transition on March 27, 2020. He founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference along with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and others, serving as its vice president and later chairman of the board. From 1977 to 1997, he served as president. Lowery participated in most of the major activities of the civil rights movement in the 50s and the 60s. He continued his civil rights work into the 21st century. This concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and its radio affiliates that contributed to the production of this show. Today's show was co-produced and edited by Lona Alliance. Special thanks to all who have contributed to making this program possible, including my co-executive producers, Paulina Vasilia, Steve Seltzer, and Verna Avery Brown Consultant. Thanks for listening. You can find this program and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. James Baldwin said, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced."
This has been COVID, Race, and Democracy, a broadcast by Pacifica Radio and its affiliates, produced by a group of committed men and women volunteers willing to make a difference. You can listen and download the show from the website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org.